This is BPN Radio, your 24-hour internet prayer station, calling America to pray. It's time now for the Christian War Room with your host, Michael Schonborn. Now, here's Michael.
Some time ago, we were talking about the Georgia Guidestones and the agenda of the elite. The biggest problem which is seen by the elite is overpopulation. And so we need to do anything to try and reduce the population. And they've got, it's my sinister view about this whole situation. They've got certain ways of doing this. I mean, one of the ways is to get people infertile in one way or another, to destroy the traditional family, which is, an unfortunate thing of the traditional family is they do multiply, they do have kids, and they bring those kids up, and we can't do this. We need to reduce the population. And then the other thing as well is to make living conditions very, very difficult so that people will choose not to have many children. Let me just talk a little bit about the Soviet Union. And I had the privilege to spend quite a bit of time in Russia and in the Ukraine. And even sort of when the transition from the socialist economy to the capitalist economy, or ultra-capitalist economy, whatever you want to call it, wasn't quite complete, so you could still see the heritage of 70 years of socialism. And let me just make a couple of, points. One of the things was that, the whole concept of making sure that everybody's got a job, that everybody can work, that people achieve in their economic activity is shared, on an equal basis between them. I'm not against this, that this is almost a Christian principle when you go back to Acts. And I've seen communist communities, Christian communist communities, where, Jesus is put as number one, and they work under, in reverence to the Lord. In these communist communities, there's one community which is big in the United States and Canada, which is the Hutterites. And I've seen sort of how these communities work, and it actually does work. They're very prosperous. They're very, people are reasonably happy on these communities. They pursue little hobbies and things like that. They're well fed. They've got a... they don't live in opulence, but they've got, live humble, happy lives. Yeah, that's what you can say. They've got good communities, and pretty much you are looked after from cradle to grave. Yeah, literally, from cradle to grave. Your education, your health care, everything is looked after. They do this within the community. They give to each one as they have need. That's a principle which is, can be found in the book of Acts in the first couple of chapters. And but one of the things which has been happening over there, and this may have been the inefficiency of the system, the economic system, and I was listening to my father, who was sort of a bit of an intellectual, he was a teacher, and when there was this big, we hate the Russians, we hate the commies, and the West is paradise, when this propaganda was going on in Western Europe and in America, at this time he was in West Germany, he was looking at both ideological concepts, and he came to the conclusion that communism simply doesn't work, and his conclusion was, it is all down to the nature of man. Some are a little bit more equal than others, and there's greed, and there are other, evil things inside of ourselves, which pretty much makes this impossible for socialism to work, because there's always going to be the tendency of somebody to exploit somebody else. And that was one thing that was happening in the Soviet bloc, from what I could see. I mean, people had a job. They were pretty much looked after from cradle to grave. They had pensions, they had healthcare, they had good healthcare as well. There was never a problem about being warm or anything like that, which, again, in a cold climate in a country like Russia, is warmth is very important. So these needs were all met, and they were looked after, and they kind of worked. But everything was sort of teetering over. It was sort of ticking over, but they weren't really getting anywhere. One thing I noticed as well was that the apartments were very, very small, and people, because of the constricted living conditions and policies which were not very favorable to families with a lot of kids, very often chose to only have one or two kids at most, and a lot of families, and I've met a lot of people there who only had one child. And I think that is sometimes a problem for a society where population goes down. Now, what's been happening with Agenda 21 is very similar. They try to encourage people to go into the cities for work, for jobs, to be hip. They try to reduce the living space to a tiny amount. And in that way, because living space is expensive, it's got to be rationed. And in that way, that's my sinister thinking. In this way, they try to reduce the number of kids people have. So instead of having maybe 3-4 kids, because they've only got a small apartment with maybe one room for a child or something, or maybe not even that, they choose to have only one kid and then not to go any further with their family planning. A lot of other things as well. We need to talk one day about abortion and abortion clinics and things like that. This whole, you know, philosophy that's behind it, almost like an ideology that it's good to, you know, kill your baby or something like that. but that's sort of all moving into this direction. We can see this with some of the stuff that comes from the Georgia Guidestones. And then in contrast, you know, we've got all these people pulled together into cities. We've got these great open country spaces. And then we've got maybe the elite who can build their retreats and all that stuff in the country. And that's possibly, you know, the way some people think it is going into. So we've got the next talk about Agenda 21. I would like to encourage you to listen carefully and also to, you know, this is Christian War Room stuff, to take on board what these people are saying, not to be ignorant of this, and also to look at it with a very critical eye. On the surface, Agenda 21 looks very positive, you know, conservationism and looking after the animals, making sure that there's plenty of space for nature to develop and things like that. Yet behind the scenes, we can very clearly identify that we are going away from the stewardship of what God has entrusted to us to worshiping nature as its own entity. And that is one of the things which has been piped down for the last, 2-3 decades, where nature, you know, is to be worshipped. It's like when you look at nature programs or at National Geographic or something, it always talks about nature. Talks about nature, never talks about God who has designed this, never talks about the creator, always talks about nature, because, you know, the creator is politically incorrect. We might upset the atheists or somebody. Okay, let's tune here to Agenda 21, and this is going to be the second of 3 talks. If you want to listen to the other talks, you can do this by going to the website christianwarroom.com. Talk number 1 is is series 122. Yeah, so you go to series 122. This is going to be 123. And then talk number 3 is going to be 124. Okay, you're listening to the Christian War Room.
In a free market, is driven by supply and demand. If I want something and you have something, probably lots of people have something, I can go down, I can buy that thing, and then the makers of that particular item make money, I have it, everybody prospers. It's driven by market need. Market need determines what happens. For example, when I was a little girl, there was a product called chocolate peanut butter out on the market. I absolutely loved it. I think I was the only one who did. It lasted about 6 months, and then they never made it again. There was no market for chocolate peanut butter. So it went away, because this is a profit-driven system. There is huge market for some things, no market for others. The market produces what the market needs. The people do it to make money. It's profit driven. It creates winners and losers. All economic systems create winners and losers. But the winners and losers are created by the market. The guys who made that chocolate peanut butter, they didn't do so well. Maybe they went on and found something else that people did want to buy. Chocolate peanut butter, not so much. But it's winners and losers based on what people will respond to, what people want, what they buy. So this system results in a highly productive society with high levels of consumption and production. Because our slogan in the West kind of is, if we run out, we'll make more. And that's what we do. We run out of something, we make more. As long as there's a market for it. Now, when we move to a central planning system is driven by the dictates of central planners. So now it's not driven by what I want to buy. It's driven by what some board someplace says they're going to produce. This is what they're going to have. This is what's going to be out there. Government planners set production and supply rather than market need, and government planners determine the market. So if I'm on a government board and I like chocolate peanut butter, it doesn't matter that none of the rest of you guys like chocolate peanut butter. That's what we're going to have. And we're not going to produce a lot of chocolate peanut butter. We're going to produce maybe, you know, like maybe 5,000 bottles of chocolate peanut butter nationwide, and you guys can fight over it. And it's going to be expensive because we produce small quantities. The market's not determining the supply. We're determining the supply, the planners. The planners determine everything. It is not driven by profit. It is driven by government subsidies. The government pays for the things that it wants, and it does not support the enterprises it doesn't want. So it's not profit-driven, it's subsidy-driven. It's top-down. And this system results in scarcity and lack and need. And I want to do an illustration now. Warren has a smartphone. I know because he told me that he did. So hold up your smartphone, please, Warren. Okay, that's a really nice smartphone. I don't have a smartphone, but other people do. And do you like your smartphone, Warren?
Yep.
Okay. So, you know, if I see that he's got this smartphone and say, you know, that's really great. Where did you buy it? Do you like it? What features does it have that you like? And I might ask some other people in the church. When I told them I was going to do this demonstration, I said, lots of us have smartphones. I might ask some of you, you know, where did you get your smartphone? How much did you pay for it? Do you like it? Does it have the right features? What kind of plan does it have? Okay. The fact that you all have smartphones, or many of you have smartphones, and I do not, does not in any way diminish my ability to get a smartphone. There are lots of smartphone stores. There are lots of companies that make versions of the smartphone. So there's lots of competition. The prices come down. There's lots of opportunities to buy one. That's because we're in a free market system. So, in fact, the fact that Warren and many of you have smartphones actually probably increases my chance of getting a smartphone because the market demands lots of smartphones. So there has to be competition. So it's a cheap product, so I can go out and find one I can afford, and I can bring in my smartphone and compare it to Warren's, and we can see who's the best one. That's free markets, okay? In a central planning system, hold up your smartphone again, Warren. In a central planning system, there are only a few smartphones because the government chooses probably one company to sell the smartphones. Probably one company makes them, probably one store sells them. There are only a few because the central planners decide how many smartphones there should be. And because there are only a few, they're very expensive. They're probably too expensive for a person like me to be able to afford. So if Warren has a smartphone and I don't, I can probably never hope to buy a smartphone. So probably what I need to do is kill Warren and take his. That's how this really works. This is the reason that in Soviet Russia, in the Stalin years, young couples who wanted to get their first apartment turned in their neighbors and had them killed as traitors to the government so they would have a vacant apartment to move into. Because the planners didn't produce all that many apartments. There was housing rationing. There was land rationing. There was rationing of everything. There was scarcity and shortage. See, in a free market system, if you have something and I don't have it, your having it does not impact me at all, except it might make me want one. It might inspire me to go buy one. And the fact that there are plenty in circulation makes that possible. But in a central planning system, if you have something, Warren has that smartphone in a central planning system, it means that I don't. And the only way I can get it is to take it away from him. It creates a finite supply, scarcity, need, misery. And this is very important when you're talking about some of the issues that we're going to be talking about in a few minutes, because this really has profound consequences. I did a flowchart for you to further illustrate this. The goal is to reduce U.S. wealth and influence in the world. That is the goal. We have to reduce U.S. wealth and influence in the world, because if we don't reduce U.S. wealth and influence in the world, we can't stop the overproduction, overconsumption. So, create scarcity. And you use an economic crisis to create public support for increasing control over the economy. Then you use the scarcity to gain increasing control over personal freedom as scarcity, misery, and dependency grow. And you use central planning techniques to create scarcity, pick winners and losers, dole out economic perks to the people and projects on your side, and punish dissenters. The planners choose who gets everything. There's more scarcity. And then finally, the final step is misery and scarcity become the new normal and dependency on government grows. You can persuade the population to relinquish freedom, for a new global system of security. Because at every phase, as things get increasingly worse, you can say, hey, you know, it's not working. We need more control. It's not working. We need more control. We need more control. We need a new system. We need to redo it. That's how this works. Remember, global central planners have the solution to all of our problems. They just need to create the right problem so that we let them implement the solution. And that's what Agenda 21 does. It creates problems to bring forth the solution. In 2012, Agenda 21 celebrated its 20th anniversary, and they had a birthday party for it in Rio de Janeiro, which was the first place that Agenda 21 started. This is now a 21st century message with 21st century messaging. You won't see a whole lot about Agenda 21, but you will see a lot about the new policy document for Rio Plus 20, which is called The Future We Want. It has a Twitter hashtag, The Future We Want. If you're on Twitter, go into Twitter sometime, put in this hashtag and see what comes up. You're going to see lots and lots of tweets and links from people who are pro this. They're environmentalists, globalists from all over the world who think this is the answer to our problems, who are very excited. They also have a streaming, real-time web TV of the climate change work the UN is doing right now. And they have YouTube videos for the current Secretary General of the UN and for various countries. In 2012, China produced a video with their citizens. They interviewed about 232 Chinese citizens. And they produced this video. It's on YouTube. You should see it. It's about 4 minutes long. It's called The Future We Want 2032. And the Chinese government asked various citizens to tell the world what they wanted to see in 20 years, with their goal for 20 years. It's very interesting because they've got this mix of very young Chinese people. One of the young women says that her goal is to be able to speak Chinese with people from all over the world. Well, China owns our debt. So if we don't start getting our house in order and paying them back, they're going to be speaking Chinese to us. This is a real serious thing. But you should see the video. I really recommend it. Now, I told you at first, this is not about one party or the other. Every president of both parties since 1992 has supported the goals of Agenda 21 and furthered the goals of Agenda 21, without exception. President George H.W. Bush signed on to Agenda 21 and the Earth Summit in 1992. The Senate did not ratify this treaty, so it's a soft treaty. It was never ratified by the Senate, but it is being implemented. Many people say that George H.W. Bush's New World Order speech was about Agenda 21. However, that speech was actually given in 1991 in reference to the invasion of Kuwait. So there's no actual evidence that it was connected to this. But he did talk about the New World Order a lot. In the meantime, everybody is committed to it. Everybody is on board with it. Everybody has worked towards it, both parties consistently. President Clinton created the Council on Sustainability in 1993 so that they could work on a local level to implement Agenda 21, and in 1995, ICLEI was created. ICLEI, Local Governments for Sustainability, is a non-governmental organization that works worldwide with local governments to implement Agenda 21, and Agenda 21 is implemented on a local level right now. There are some national policy decisions that drive it, but it's implemented locally. There are over 1,100 cities worldwide that are members of ICLEI. Over 550 U.S. cities are members. That number actually used to be higher. The exposure that Agenda 21 has gotten from people like Beck and like Rosa Coire have actually caused cities to leave their membership. So if you do a little research, you'll see the cities that used to be members and the cities that are now. It's very instructive. El Paso, Texas is a current member. And you can see all the U.S. members by going to ICLEIUSA.org for the U.S. You can see the worldwide members at ICLEI.org. You can read their policy statements, too. Because of the fear of globalism, that was even a long time ago, in 1998, Gary Lawrence, who was an advisor to the Clinton-Gore Council on Sustainable Development, said we need to rename Local Agenda 21. In some cases, Local Agenda 21 is seen as an attack on the nation state. So we'll call it something else. Comprehensive planning, smart growth, growth management. Those are the names by which we know it today. Today, Agenda 21 goes under the terms smart growth, smart code, sustainability, smart meters, sustainable development, green, walkable, livable. That's how we know it. That's how we know it here in this city. Over the last 2 years, our city has implemented smart growth, smart code, and they're in the process of doing it. We've seen huge changes to our city in the last 2 years. In the last 2 years, we've had a new landscape ordinance to make our city greener. You know, where Ryan Little was up here talking earlier about the overruns on our project. Part of the overruns on our building project here in this church are because of the new landscape ordinance and smart growth. The church is being charged extra on the parking lot because we have to put in little islands of greenery. And we're not allowed to put up as many parking spaces. And we have to have green lights, which don't cause light pollution. This is very expensive. And it creates a less useful parking lot. It creates rationing. Because Agenda 21 policies always create rationing and scarcity. It makes things more scarce. That's the goal. So we have a less useful parking lot. And it's more expensive. Green is very expensive. Anytime you get into green, it costs a lot of money. It's not easy being green. It's not cheap either. We have a new downtown redevelopment project. If you've turned on the news of any channel in the last 2 years, you have seen about the downtown redevelopment project. We have a huge new project going up, and you may have even seen some of the slides that they have put up from the city planner. And it shows us how we're going to be changed totally. We're going to have storefronts down below and retail up above, housing up above. So it's going to be retail below, housing above. And people are going to live above the store, just like they used to. And we're going to be in apartments. Remember what I told you about the Dodd-Frank bill? We're moving from a society of 60% homeowners to 60% renters. The streets are going to be narrow because Agenda 21 discourages driving. So it's narrow. We're going to have transportation corridors, public transportation. We have bike lanes. We have walkable communities. We have green spaces. We are expanding our public transit system after spending $27 million on Sun Metro, including $13 million from federal funds and $14 million from state and local funds. I just announced this on the news a couple of weeks ago. So we're going to have this bus system that's really ramped up because we're not supposed to drive. Driving uses energy. We're supposed to use public transportation. We have a AAA ballpark baseball stadium and new city headquarters for new offices downtown. The AAA ballpark baseball stadium is actually, the foundation was being poured this week. We moved our city hall. We imploded our city hall April 14th. And now we have the baseball stadium going up. And we have other green things. We have roundabouts to calm traffic. Even though the residents, I saw a news report from KVIA that 70% of El Pasoans say they hate roundabouts. Roundabouts calm traffic. That's Agenda 21 code for stop driving. You're not supposed to be driving. You're supposed to be using public transit. We don't want you in a car. Cars pollute. How did we accomplish all of this? Well, first of all, our city hired a consulting group. They were called Dover Cole. Dover Cole is from Portland, Oregon. And I told you, Portland is the home of smart growth. This consulting group came in to do city meetings about smart growth, smart code. If you go to the city website, they will tell you that there was huge buy-in from the community, and they'll show this photograph of all the different people at the meetings. I went to some of those meetings. I was the chair of the board of the El Paso Hispanic Chamber of Commerce in 2011, so I attended some of these. The neighborhood planning meeting that I went to, I was the only person there. Nobody else showed up. It was me and the man and woman from Dover Cole explaining the plan. Why did nobody show up? Well, because it's the city master plan. We're going to redo the city plan. You know, that sounds really dull. Maybe if they had said, you know, we're here as part of a UN plan to bankrupt your city and take away all your stuff and put you in tiny housing, people would have shown up for that. But it wasn't advertised that way. It was advertised as the city master plan is here and this is going to be great. Voters did not get to vote on the master plan. That's pretty normal, I think. I don't think voters in most cities vote on the city plan. But this buy-in, there were other meetings where people did attend, and I went to some of those too. But the individual neighborhood meetings, a lot of people didn't show up for those. They didn't understand what was going on. The city council made a decision on a AAA ballpark and the expenditures. The voters did not get to vote on that. The cost for our city hall and our ballpark together is estimated to be between $85 and $100 million. In addition to the bonds that we voted on, the city was able to float additional bonds that we do not vote on. So we have hundreds of millions of dollars in debt that we did not get to vote on. We did not get to vote on moving City Hall. We did get to vote last November on the quality of life improvement bonds, which were over $440 million. These bonds are supposed to help us. We also got to vote on the hotel tax. And if you saw the ads last year that the city did, it was very clear. This is not voting for the ballpark. This is not voting for City Hall. These are done deals. They don't impact, you don't have any impact on these. The only part you get to vote on is how people pay for it. Do you want to pay for it with high property taxes? Or do you want outsiders to pay for it when they come to visit the city? So, of course, everybody went down and voted for the hotel tax because we didn't get to vote on anything else. I got my property tax bill a few weeks ago. It went up 15%. The city didn't raise the tax rate, but they reevaluated the properties, and that's the same thing. And so the taxes are high. The taxes were supposed to be low. Taxes are high. The taxes are very high so that we can pay for this. So for the low, low price of $500 million, we are told that we are getting a better city where younger people will want to live. We want the creative class. We want young, hip, cool people who will drive economic growth in our city. We're going to get a cleaner, greener, more walkable city. We're going to get economic growth from downtown revitalization. And we're going to get renewed civic pride. We won an award from the EPA. Our mayor won an award, one of the top five mayors in the world. People will love us. They'll appreciate us. It's our time. Except for one small thing. We're spending money we don't have. And that's a proven strategy for failure. A KVIA story that aired September 12, 2012, reporter Matthew Smith interviewed city manager or deputy city county manager Bill Studer, and he said of AAA ballparks, they all lose money from a strictly accounting thing. It's going to take us 250 years to break even on the stadium expense. That is longer than the United States has been a nation. Our great-grandchildren won't see this paid off. But it's okay, because it's going to drive economic growth downtown. There's going to be, it doesn't matter. They all lose money from a strictly accounting thing. But it's okay, because we're going to be green, and that's going to drive development, and that's going to cause people to move in. It's going to cause companies to move in. Well, maybe not. They all lose money from a strictly non-accounting thing, too. Colgate University in the summer of 2012 did a study directed by Peter Kohler, and this was their finding. Literature suggests that only 8 of 55 stadiums that are currently in use and were constructed with at least 25% public funding have succeeded in spurring economic development. Only 8. And last year, the Maloofs, you may be familiar with the Maloofs, they own a big casino in Palm Springs, or in Las Vegas, Nevada, and I think also in Palm Springs. They're very, very wealthy family. They were supposed to build a stadium in Sacramento, California, and they pulled out, and the Sacramento people were enraged. But the reason they pulled out was they had listened to a report from economist Christopher Thornburg, who said that when you do these stadiums, you will put Sacramento on the edge of fiscal disaster. Economists have long understood that new arenas and sports stadiums don't bring new economic activity. They just move entertainment dollars around. In other words, maybe I'll go to the movies, maybe I'll go spend $40 at the ballpark. What do they do? Well, they create zones where private property can be taken for eminent domain for developers. And our current congressman is an advocate of this. He has spoken publicly about the need to use eminent domain to take private property, to give to developers, to make the city more viable. He hasn't said it for a long time, but he said it before he was candidate for congressman.
The next talk is going to be on the next Christian War Room talk from Agenda 21. That's going to be the final one. Very sinister stuff going on there, and we need to be very, very careful, what is happening to our communities. You're listening to the Christian War Room.
For the past half hour, you've been listening to the Christian War Room with host Michael Sean Bourne. For more information on how you can participate or find out more about the Christian War Room, simply go to ChristianWarRoom.com. That's ChristianWarRoom.com.